Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
What a Wednesday it is, live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. It's me, Anna D., Anna DeVlantis, here on WGN. Did you listen? Did you hear former Governor Rob Blagojevich today, a.k.a. the Trumpocrat? That's what he calls himself now. Speaking outside his Ravenswood Manor home today, he is exactly as I remember him, only with white hair. I will say he's charismatic, just as he always was. He's a compelling speaker, no doubt, but a little more humble. I did feel that, whether it's time in prison, and that'll do that to you, time to reflect, or just being away from his family. I don't know, but I did detect that thing that we really haven't seen. Steve, I don't know if you've noticed that. I don't remember Rob Blagojevich ever being humble in this way.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the word humble. Maybe, though. I mean, he was certainly more introspective than we've seen before.
I felt this time he was talking about others in a way that felt more sincere in terms of what he wants to do with criminal justice reform and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. We'll see if that's the direction he takes his life from this point forward. But it did feel as if there was some sincerity to that.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, Anna? It's an odd contradiction or combination, because there was sincerity but no contrition. Mm-hmm. Right. So he still firmly believes, or says he believes, that he was wronged by all of this.
And, right.
Doesn't regret apparently what he's done. But yeah, he talked very much, very poignantly, really, about losing the time with his daughter and appraising his daughter, who's gone from 8 to 16 while he was gone.
I want to get to that, because we have some of that sound for you. He was political at times. We saw that for sure. He was personal. You're right. If you were looking for remorse, you're right, Steve, in this speech, you were disappointed. That was not there. At one point, he even called himself a political prisoner. So that's how he views this whole thing.
Right.
Most emotional, though, when he talked about his family, right? He talked about his daughters, Amy and Annie, who have literally grown up since he's been in prison.
Yeah, and one of them now on to her master's. You know, it's got to be very difficult for them as well. And, you know, just the idea of adjusting to new life, it's funny or not funny that he kept dabbing his chin because he...
Yes! Let's hear this little piece where he talks about his daughters first, and then I want to move on to that.
Sure.
Because then he talks about life behind bars and just revealed some interesting things there, too. But here's him talking about his daughters.
A better way to measure how long it's been is through our daughters, Amy and Annie. When I left home so long ago, Amy, our older daughter, was a sophomore in high school. And it'll be 2 years this spring since she's graduated from college, and now just recently, Amy earned a master's degree. And we're very proud of you, sweetheart.
Yeah.
And Andy, our younger daughter, was 8 years old when I left. She was about this high.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's 16, and now she has her driver's license, and she's doing good in school, and she plays the piano, and we're very proud of her, too. Look at you, sweetheart. Look at you. My baby's growing up so fast.
That was the part where you felt as if, you know, that seemed very real. There were other moments where he did also seem, you know, very real. And I felt it when he did talk about criminal justice reform. Now, whether you believe he got exactly what he deserved, or he should have got more, he should have got the full 14 years. What he does next, I think, will reveal a lot about who he is and the next chapter. What do you think he should do next? Let us know. 312-981-7200. What do you think he should do? What do you think he will do? And that may be a different question. I definitely got the sense, listening to him today, that he plans to work for others in this way of dealing with people who are wrongfully accused or wrongfully convicted, people who are unfairly treated within the justice system. And we know that that happens. I don't know if you want to assign that to his case, but we know that that happens. And he could be a powerful voice in that space.
I hope you're right, but I hope, you know, he hasn't always been the most sincere political actor, Anna. And I've covered a lot of politics. I remember I covered one politician who we chased him out of prison, out of the Metropolitan Correctional Center. And he had a news conference in the Monadnock building with his lawyer. Mm-hmm. And he had a Quran in one hand and a Bible in the other, you know, because he had just been released and had found both Muhammad and Jesus, apparently. You know, so I think you have that in the moments of your release. But I'm not willing to believe that Rod Blagojevich just completely changed his spots just yet. I hope you're right that he has.
That's what I think we should see. We'll see. What do people think? Do you think that he will? Has he changed any spots? Has he decided to turn over a new leaf and devote his life to other people in a sincere way? I don't know. That's what he seemed to hint at today, but it'll be interesting to see what's like. Or will he get totally political? Will he work for the Trump campaign? Will he do something along those lines? I didn't hear that today, but that doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything about what he will do. I think one of the things, too, that people are talking about today is whether or not it was 8 years long enough. And I think when you look at this case and you say whether you think he's guilty of sin or he really didn't do that much or he didn't do anything more than other politicians do, you hear that. Was 8 years long enough? And that's a central issue here.
It's funny because you have the Republicans in Illinois lining up saying no, that, you know, that he should not have been released. And you've at least the most prominent Democrat, Dick Durbin, having said earlier that, you know, he thought he probably had served enough time. So it's almost partisan in the flip.
Yeah, it's true. We've got 815. He's a lying piece of crap. The voice on the tapes is the real Rod. And those are certainly getting a lot of play to remind us exactly in his words what he said, right? What he said. And I just think the justification for the sentence back then was that this is supposed to send a clear message to politicians across the state that corruption will not be tolerated. We're not going to stand for it. And I just can't see how you think that that is actually happening when you look at this massive, sweeping investigation of corruption of public officials, one of the biggest we've seen in modern Illinois history. I want to ask Walter Jacobson. He's here in the studio because he's covered a number of corrupt politicians in his day, more than most, actually, Walter. When you look at this and you think, okay, here he is, he's out, did they effectively send a message, the 14-year thing? Not everyone's going to get commuted. That's still out there, that federal prosecutors will put you away for 14 years, twice what Governor Ryan got, and maybe even more for the next guy. I don't know.
You know, and that's the question that everybody is asking right now. I mean, everybody in the political world. And as you just suggested, and I really agree with you, that the message hasn't sunk in. The message probably will never sink in fully. You remember the old quote by the alderman in Chicago, Patty Bowler, who said Chicago ain't ready for reform. Well, every time there's a case like this, the media goes wild about it, and the editorial pages are screaming that this is a message that everybody's got to hear. And they will. You know, you don't think if you are involved in some sort of criminal activity that you're going to get caught or you wouldn't be involved in it. And now we're finding that the prosecutors nationwide and very especially here in Chicago citywide and Springfield-wide are making politicians afraid to behave the way they did so many years. But they still do and still will. Listen, we've had 30 Chicago aldermen, Anna, 30 in the past 40 years who have been sent to prison. Four of our past seven governors have gone to prison. Blagojevich was in prison with Governor Ryan. So that's the kind of thing that people are used to, and they have spent, these politicians, all of their lives getting to the next step, and where it takes some kind of crime to take that step, they'll do it.
Yeah, amen. Amen to that. Walter Jacobson, thank you. We're going to get to your calls. Thank you. We've got several people on the line who have want to weigh in on this, and also your texts. As we continue to talk about Rod Blagojevich today, Natasha Korecki is a national reporter for Politico. She's going to be on the show. She has a very interesting story to tell because she sat next to Patty Blagojevich during one of those trials because of a unique situation. More to come here on WGN Radio. Anna DeVellantis here on WGN. It's 1:17. We're continuing to talk about Rod Blagojevich. Either way you look at it, he's got the most powerful man on his side. And here's another one, 219. I never cared much for Rod either way, but no denying it, the man can speak well. And others, keep him coming. We've got a couple others here, people saying what he might do. We were talking about after. Got to give it to him. The man can speak well, from the 630. And we've got Nick, you've been waiting on the line for a little bit here. Tell us what you think, your thoughts on this day.
Yeah, I thought that Blagojevich hasn't missed a step politically. He's always been a sharp guy, had a sharp mind. But yeah, I thought right away when he started talking, and I saw it live when it appeared on TV, that, you know, if you compare how he talked, even if you omit before he got in trouble, omit the coarse language, he was definitely on a quid pro quo pattern. You know, he wanted something. We forget about the Children's Hospital, where he put pressure on a man that to approve a permit or whatever it was, I want you to contribute something to my, like, 50, I think he rightly said, like, 50,000, 100,000 to my reelection campaign. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the idea was that he never said he wanted anything for himself, like an envelope full of cash he could put in his pocket. He thought maybe that would make it okay. But, you know, you don't go around doing that. So I thought the finding him guilty was correct. I thought the judge was trying to be careful to not give a light sentence. Then everybody starts saying, well, the judge must have been paid off, or he's a political hack or whatever. But I thought maybe a 3-year sentence, what, serving about 6 months, would have been more appropriate, because the man was disgraced anyhow. You know, he's not going to be able to do much of anything. He lost his law license.
He's been impeached.
Anyhow,
he's a federal felon, right? So he's got a number of stacks strikes against him, but there's still things he can do. Nick, we got to go, but tell me what you think he should do next. What will he do next?
He should do what he's been saying in his 20 minutes when he was there, that to try to work on improving the system. People of color are angry about a lot of things, and I'm a white guy, conservative guy, but I agree that over 50 years of observing this as an activist and paying attention to stuff, yeah, there are definitely problems. We see it now with so many people of color being released from prison for 25 years. What the heck is that about,
right?
You know, for something they didn't do, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, he should pursue that. I hope he gets on a radio talk show, maybe yours.
Yeah, maybe he'll come on here. We'll have him. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. We've got a number of people saying, hey, 630, when I hear all the opinions, remember, corruption in Illinois will prevail. That's sort of what we heard from Walter Jacobson a minute ago. Rod caught the wrath of those greasy politicians. Some people on his side here. Greg says, where is it written that being incarcerated means you're supposed to change your philosophy of life? Interesting comments. Keep them coming. The phone lines will be open, but we got to get to Natasha Korecki here. She's a national reporter for Politico. You covered the trial from start to finish. And because you had a unique situation here where you sat next to Patty Blagojevich for some of that trial. And I just want to get your thoughts, Natasha, because you cover politics here in Chicago when you were at the Sun-Times for a long time. And when you saw the Rod Blagojevich today, what was in your mind before and after?
Well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah. It's in so many ways, it's like just vintage Rod Blagojevich, right? You know, he's already spinning. Last night was saying that he was freed because of all these lies that were told, sort of making it sound as if he has just been given a pardon, which he was not. His sentence was commuted. As you pointed out, he served 8 years of his sentence, a 14-year sentence. And under federal guidelines, he probably would have been able to get out around 11 and a half years. So that's the amount that got shaved off. But when I looked at him and heard him, he just sounds very similar. You know, not contrite at all, is not apologizing. If you remember his sentencing, very stubbornly, barely apologized because he had to in order to get a more lenient sentence. So in that respect, you know, my takeaway today was we are going to hear a lot from him.
What do you think he'll do, Natasha? If you just had to be a guessing person, that's what we've been asking our listeners, and thanks for the text. We've got a number of them to read. What do you he seemed to hint today that the next chapter of his life will be about other people. It won't be about making money. It won't be about, you know, being out there necessarily to do anything other than help people in the criminal justice system who've been wronged, and he perceives himself as being wronged. But he talked about criminal justice reform. He talked about minorities, people who are poor, can't afford good counsel. He talked about the people who are put away for years and are later found to be wrongfully convicted. And we've seen a number of those cases here in Illinois. Is that what he's going to do?
You know, it remains to be seen. Maybe he was deeply moved in the time he was in prison. One thing we can say is that he was uncharacteristically quiet when he was in prison. And, you know, that was something that was definitely a change. He showed some constraint during those years. He reportedly got close to a lot of different inmates. So if he is doing that, I find it difficult to believe that there won't be some very public aspect of that, trying to get onto some kind of TV, you know, news panel to talk about this effort or whatever effort. The question is, you know, how does the media accept him now? You know, do people, is he going to be legitimized and put on as an expert or something like that?
Right. He can't. Let's talk about that quickly, Natasha, before we run out of time. Sure. Can he run for office again? A lot of people talking about that. He's been impeached. He is a felon. He hasn't been pardoned. He's been commuted. So it just means his sentence is as served. It doesn't mean the felony conviction goes away. And I know this part of it. The state of Illinois said he can't hold office in the state of Illinois, right? When they impeached him, they put that in the language.
Right. He cannot in Illinois as of now, but as you and I both know, and the world knows, I never say never about anything. Who knows? He could reinvent himself. Trump could end up doing a pardon. And, you know, if the story has changed, it has unbelievable legs. I mean, who knew that 8 years from now we'd be talking about this the way we are today?
So true.
It's remarkable.
So true. Very quickly, we're totally out of time. You sat next to Patty because you were pregnant, and so they gave you a special seat. So you sat next to her during the trial. You covered it start to finish. Are you feeling for her today?
You know, the family's been through a lot. She lobbied hard. She went on Fox News and was trying to speak directly to the president. Turns out that worked. You know, we all saw a lot of her during the trial. Prosecution was investigating her at one point. They ended up not pursuing those any charges against her. But it's a very muddled case.
For sure.
You know, yeah.
Natasha, we got to leave it there because we're running out of time here. But I really appreciate you calling into the show. We enjoy your work on Politico. I've always enjoyed your reporting here in Chicago. And you are national reporter for Politico. That's where you find Natasha Korecki. Thanks, Natasha.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Keep the texts coming. We got a lot to discuss here. And we also got on this show Len Goodman, who was there by his side during that press conference, and also famed attorney Sam Adam Jr. on the show coming up. Coming up on 132 here on WGN, it's Anna DeBlanc. As we've been talking about what Rod Blagojevich should do next, what he will do next, what he should do next. 312, I think the federal government could have him serve in the U.S. Army for 2 years, experience like what it's like as part of his sentence. I think 8 years in prison was enough to sort of figure out like life, what life is, but that's not a bad idea. He should go fishing, 815. Just go fishing. Relax a little bit. 847, he'll stump for Trump. That's a possibility. Blago should just be quiet. That ain't going to happen. Ugh, he's back. We've got Blagojevich 2.0. We'll see what he does. He still doesn't sound remorseful, 224 says. That's Tom from Elgin. Thanks for your thoughts. And then 708, if you ever watch Blago on The Apprentice, you'd realize he has no skills. 815, someone said Ronnie Woo Woo was there today. Rod Woo. I don't know if he was saying that or if you're just saying that, but it's kind of funny. 773, Blagojevich was the seller. Who was the buyer? And talks about others who might have been implicated within the state. And you know, look, there is an ongoing, not on this particular issue, but there's an ongoing federal probe into a number of different public officials across the state. And that comes back to my point about I just don't understand if this did send a message, this severe 14-year sentence, because that was just what it was supposed to be about. Keep your texts coming about the next chapter for Rod Blagojevich, what he should do, what he will do, and we'll open the phone lines up in just a little bit here. But Donna Moore is here. We need to talk to Donna Moore. She's also an attorney, former Fed. She's a former USA. What do they say again?
AUSA.
That's it. Assistant State's Attorney. And she wants to be the next Cook County State's Attorney. She's one of four Democrats running in the race. Currently, Kim Fox is our State's Attorney, and she's got a number of challengers who are very well qualified, and Donna, you're among them. Do you have any thoughts to sort of weave together what you're seeing today with Rad Blagojevich's release? I mean, you worked within this system.
Right. I was both assistant state's attorney and assistant U.S. attorney. I think what it shows is just, you mentioned it earlier in your show, there is a culture of corruption in our state, in our county, and in our city, and we can't seem to shake it. And my race is a perfect example of it. I have Kim Fox, who represents the corrupt Cook County political machine, who takes a phone call and does what she's told. And I have another candidate, Conway, whose father and the family company is the master of pay-to-play. They came into Illinois. They paid off politicians to get pension fund investments for the family company. And he says he's going to root out corruption. His family company is the problem. They're the payers.
We're having all the candidates on that side. We've reached out to all of them to be on the show. Bob Fioretti so far has accepted our invitation, as you have too. What do you think is front and center in this race? Because I know Kim Fox has gotten a lot of attention for a number of issues. Some people are perfectly okay with the way she's handled things, and they like the idea of criminal justice reform. She ran on that, and she's doing that, and she's trying to turn attention to that. Let's pay attention to the violent criminals, the violent crimes. That's where our priorities are, and not the nonviolent crimes. Although I'd argue the Jussie Smollett thing was not about that; it was more about trust in her office. Where do you fall on this whole thing, this issue?
Look, as state's attorney, you need to be ready to have trust from the public, which she lost because of Jussie Smollett and the way that the case was handled. But you can't X out whole areas of crime. You need to prosecute crime, whether it's violent or nonviolent. You don't announce to the city and the county that you're not going to prosecute retail theft. The resources in the office, you have enough to do both. We can have a culture of criminal justice reform, which is important. You need to have the judgment to know which cases and which individuals merit second chances. But you also need to hold people accountable. And holding people accountable doesn't mean throwing them in prison and throwing away the key. But it means that the first step in any kind of case is to have somebody say, I did it, I'm sorry, and repair the harm. If you don't have that, you can't have criminal justice.
Police officers will tell us anecdotally that they believe that retail theft going from $300 to $1,000, that they change because they don't want to deal with quote-unquote petty types of non-violent thefts. If you don't use a gun, if you don't do certain things, that it's sort of dismissed. But the police officers will tell you that the word gets out about that, and that creates more lawlessness, and that there is that element that they are seeing. That's what they tell us anecdotally. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that?
Yes. What's happening now? Remember, the law didn't change. If the law needs to change from 300 to a higher amount, take it to the legislature. Kim Fox changed it by way of policy of what she will and won't prosecute. You need to steal over $1,000 and have 10 felony and have 10 convictions. But what happens is when you announce that, people do feel a lawlessness. They go in, these are organized gangs, not one-off individuals stealing a candy bar. And they're going into stores, they're stealing $995 worth of stuff, and they're walking out and waving to security cameras. Mm. And what's happened over the last 3 years, because we're now one of the top five cities for retail theft, but what happens is these guys are emboldened. They're now walking in with guns, and so your retail theft becomes an armed robbery.
And they're not prosecuting those, are you saying that?
Well, they're not. The store security isn't detaining people. The police aren't coming because they know they're not going to get charges because the state's attorney isn't charging. So there is a sense of lawlessness because the state's attorney won't hold people accountable.
I think a number of people, when Kim Fox first ran, she talked about the inequities in the system, and I think that there was a compelling argument, and still is, about how certain people, whether you're come from a poverty background or you come from, if you're Black or Hispanic, that the system has not always been fair to people who come from those backgrounds, or certainly it has been fairer to others. And she wanted to say, hey, nonviolent crimes we're going to look at very differently. We're not going to be putting people away for years and years who have, you know, nonviolent possession of drugs, for instance. And I think a lot of people took that and said, that makes a lot of sense. Where it's gone from there, though, would you agree of how this has been implemented?
Well, two things. We don't want to criminalize poverty. So we don't want to keep someone awaiting trial in county jail merely because they can't make their bond. If somebody with the same charge can make their bond. So that's something that you need to really focus on. But it's a case-by-case issue because you might have somebody who commits a nonviolent crime with no criminal background or not so much criminal background. You may have someone with a 10-page rap sheet. So you have to have the judgment to deal with those cases differently, and the law allows us to do that. But when she talks about, you know, issues and people are treated differently, Jussie Smollett is the reason everybody's upset because he was treated differently. She's giving special deals to people who are rich and famous and connected.
Yeah, so our guest here is Donna Moore. She's running for Cook County State's Attorney, and she's a former assistant U.S. attorney, a former assistant Cook County State's Attorney. And you, this is a race where you've got a lot of noise and a lot of funding going around. I don't know that you're generating enough noise or enough fun, or have enough funds. Maybe what is it people need to know about you to get your message across?
Well, I'm independent. I'm raising money the old-fashioned way, which is from a lot of people who are interested in seeing the way we dispense justice in this county change. I don't have a political machine behind me. I don't have a billionaire's ATM machine. So I am taking my case to the voters. We are out there. We're getting really, really positive enforcement, especially with everything that's going on, because I think people have had it. They are sick and tired of the same old, same old. You know, the feds are indicting our politicians almost weekly, and the state's attorney can't find a politician to indict. But when you're tied to a machine, whether it's an ATM or a political one, you're never going to find people to indict.
Mm-hmm. 630, Donna, here's a question for you. How do you put a shoplifter in jail with the rest of the criminals? I don't know if that's what you're suggesting.
No, I'm not suggesting that. You know, again, if you have somebody who walks into a store and steals a sweatshirt or a candy bar or whatever, that person is going to not be held in custody pending a trial. I think that's what they're asking.
Okay.
And that's really the difference. That I don't know that that really happened in the past as well. I think sometimes there were bonds set just kind of off the cuff. And I think what we have to do and what our state's attorneys have to do is look at the case and say, we're not going to hold somebody who doesn't have a violent background, who didn't commit a violent crime. We're not going to hold them pending trial. And they're not going to go to prison even if a conviction happens.
312, which primary ballot is Donna Moore on?
The Democratic ballot, you have to pull a Democratic ballot, which I think that's where all the races are in the primary, truth be told.
Yeah, so, it's Cook County.
So I do hope that people pull a Democratic ballot and vote. That's the most important thing. When you think about, we can actually change the course of history for our county and elect an independent, experienced lawyer who's practiced and advocated for all of her career, which is something we don't have.
Donna, we have 30 seconds here. 708, how will you handle this lawlessness, or even how about juveniles that are exhibiting these kinds of behaviors, because we tend to treat them differently in our system?
Well, I think juvenile court is where you can make a difference, you know, and what we need to do is find alternative solutions to incarceration for our juveniles, to juvenile detention. And those are where I would like to have some public-private partnerships where we can have after-school programs and other kinds of things to keep them from being a repeat offender.
Okay, Donna Moore, she wants to be the next Cook County State's Attorney. You know how to find her on the Democratic ballot. Thank you, Donna. Thanks for stopping by WGN.
Thank you.
Keep your thoughts coming about what Rob Blagojevich should do now that he's out. 708, televangelist. How about that? Here's a suggestion. We're going to continue to talk about that here, coming up here, including Sam Adams Jr., the famed attorney who represented him in the first trial, the one that worked out well for Rod Blagojevich. He's going to be joining the show next. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. 1:45 is the time as we continue to talk about what should Rod Blagojevich do now that he's out and free. What will he do? That's another question, so keep the texts coming. He did seem to hint that the next chapter for him is about justice reform and fighting for people who don't have a voice in the criminal justice system. Let's talk to famed attorney who does have a big voice in the justice system, Chicago Attorney Sam Adam Jr. How are you, Sam?
I'm fine. Same attorney. You got to get out more, Anna, if you think I'm paid.
You are. You are worthy of that title, and I do not just banter that around all the time. That doesn't go to everybody. Sam, tell me your thoughts today. You represented him in the first trial. That worked out well for the governor. Then he got the second trial and the 14-year sentence. Did you think this day would come?
You know, I had always hoped that he'd be able to get back with his family. You know, I'm much more on the legal part of it than the political part. You know, the political part of it, I'm not schooled on at all. But as far as the legal part was concerned, I always did. I thought that perhaps 14 years was too much, especially for a nonviolent crime where everybody agreed no money had changed hands. And I'm always interested in the kids, and it was nice to see him back with his family.
Yeah, I mean, that was the part I think that no matter what you think about him, how if you think he deserved the full 14 years and guilty of sin or not, or that he was wronged by the justice system or anywhere in between, I think it is when you see someone reunited, no matter who they are, with their kids, that's a big thing. I mean, here's the youngest went away, Annie, I believe, when she was 8 and now is a sophomore. He talked about her. He talked about how his oldest has now a master's or working on that. And that, you know, he wished time would slow down so he could stay with him. That's a very human thing. That's a very relatable moment. Do you believe this is a different person now? Anything different about Rob Blagojevich that you could see from the man you knew before?
Well, everybody is going to change. And you know, I watched the press conference today, and you read some of the things online and the Twitter stuff, and a lot of people are upset about it and the way that he went about it. But they also have to understand, and I'm not telling you make excuse for it, but understand how prison works. When you're in prison for 8 years, you are surrounded by people who constantly are telling you you're right, constantly telling you you've been wrongfully convicted, they've been wrongfully convicted, and they hype you up. And so he's got 8 years of pressure that is now being lifted off of him. And so he may go a little bit too far in the things he said, like calling himself a political prisoner and those type of things, the histrionics of it, maybe going too far. But it's just blowing off steam. He should have calmed down. He will calm down to get this behind him and then start moving toward a much more positive result.
Well, talking about a positive result, we've been talking about that on the show today because the next chapter for him will pretty much define who he is. And what do you think, given what you know about Rob Blagojevich, what do you think he'll do? You heard a hint of him talking today that criminal justice reform might be in the future for him. What do you think, Sam Adam?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility. He's at a fork in the road right now, like many of us get in times of crisis. He is home now, and he can take it one way or another. One of the good ways that I could see is, yes, he could devote himself to criminal justice reform. Also, at the same time, understanding that people do need to go to prison when they've committed crimes, and there are not everybody is falsely accused, but we need to help those that haven't had a voice and can show their innocence. And the other side of that as well is the political. I think he would make a wonderful political consultant or someone on the news that can talk about the policies and where they go. One thing I know about Rod for sure is he's very bright, very well read. And if he would take the experience that he's had and turn that and try to give some real analysis and help people out here who are trying to figure out the political landscape, I think he could do wonders if he's going to allow himself to be run by those that are trying to use his experience for their own political gain. He's going to find himself in trouble.
Well, he describes himself as a Trumpocrat now. Do you think he would work for the Trump campaign? Do you think he'd do something in that vein? I mean, I know this isn't based on a conversation you've had with him, but just your thoughts.
No.
Should he?
I haven't talked to Rod about this at all. I could see that happening. Look, you know, when somebody does something way out of the ordinary and saves your family, you are prone to do things you ordinarily wouldn't. So he very well might find himself in the position of feeling to himself, I owe, therefore I'll have to do what they ask me to do. And I think if he goes in with that particular attitude, you could find yourself in trouble.
We have 224 saying he's served enough time. There are other people out there that deserve a lot more time than he did. Tom from Elgin. By the way, he says, Tom also adds, he's not a political prisoner, so he's not completely on his side on that. You know, you did hear that a lot, that the 14-year thing was too much. And the other piece of that, and we were discussing this earlier with Walter Jacobson, is that the 14-year thing was a way the judge had a broad discretion on these kinds of matters. He was trying to send a message to politicians across the state of Illinois. If you can hear this, it's going to be really tough on you. These stiff penalties are coming your way, too, that corruption will not be tolerated. tolerated in the state of Illinois. Was that effective? Do you think that now, looking back, that worked in any way? Did it deter people?
I'll tell you the same thing I said then is the same way I feel now. That never works. That has nothing to do with making change. What's going to make change is if you take the money out of politics. It's as simple as what Adam Smith said in the 1600s, which was, you're going to find supply and demand. You're going to have somebody in office and somebody out there who wants a contract. And sooner or later, the person who wants the contract is going to offer enough money to where the person in power is going to accept it. It's going to have a meeting point between that supply side and that demand side. And until we understand as a people that the legislature needs to say, we are not going to allow money to be given and contracts given to the people who give the money, you're never going to fix this problem. And Pufa's point is, they're talking about investigating Springfield right now. They're talking about indicting more people from aldermen and state reps. Now, it didn't solve anything. What it did was push up the price.
How do you reflect on that for a moment? Because I think all of us, you know, have heard through sources that there's much more to come from the federal prosecutors who are already announced several indictments, both here locally, aldermen, and down in Springfield as well. That there's a lot more to come. This is a sweeping federal investigation into corruption, and it just makes us feel as like, when does this end? It makes me feel that way.
And isn't that proof positive that giving out 14-year sentences isn't the answer? It may be part of it, if you feel that may be a section of it, but it's the money involved here. The regular, common, everyday person doesn't have the ability to lobby the legislature, doesn't have the ability to have somebody go down and have steak dinners with the representatives in Springfield. We're just regular people out here, day in and day out. It's the special interests, it's the big-time business people that are able to do that, and you're never going to stop that until you say enough is enough. We're going to sit down and say you cannot get contracts if you've given money. Until that day comes, we're going to continue to see indictments, and we're going to continue to see corruption.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. It's something about the system that necessarily makes them, the politicians have to continually raise money. That's what Blagojevich was doing, trying to raise money. And, you know, again, reflecting on what he did, maybe not right. It just felt as if that is the pressure that you're pointing out here that is a real issue for our system. I don't know how you change that, though, Sam. What would you suggest?
There's a couple of things. Number one is we're in a catch-22. Why? Because the people that have to make the change are the very ones in the legislature that don't want to do it. They're the ones that want the money to keep flowing in so they can continue to win elections. If we were going to have people that really wanted to come out and make the change, they would have to sacrifice their own ability to raise money and say, this is what I'm running on. I'm running on a platform where I say, yes, the Supreme Court said that there's a First Amendment right to give money. But what we're going to do here in Illinois is we're going to say the person cannot accept more than $200 or $500. We can sit down and argue how much that is. While the person can give as much as they want, the candidate can only accept X amount. The rest of it goes into a pot, and that pot will be distributed evenly among that particular, like the Democrats or the Republicans, to whoever you did. That way, you have spread it out, and the individual who has given the $200 to the candidate is giving no more than someone like me and somebody that could drive the bus or these big shots that run the corporation. And therefore, you're trying to take the money out and the special interests out of running your legislature.
I like that idea. I mean, you look at even the Cook County State's Attorney's race, millions of dollars are in that race, and you just think you need that even. We were just talking to Donna Moore. She doesn't have that. She's at a disadvantage. But that kind of money that's going in that race for a Cook County, a county level office, it's unbelievable. Finally, Sam, I know you're so busy, but I want to ask you, you're close with the Blagojeviches. At some point, you will have a chance to talk with them, maybe in a meaningful way. What advice would you give to Rod about the next chapter, about the road ahead? What would you say to him?
The advice I would give him would be one from a father's perspective, which is sit down and hug those two girls, hug that Patty who spent her last 8 years trying to get you out, and sit down and think of only them, not yourself. Don't sit down and think what's best for you. Think about what's best for those girls, because they're going to need a father who has their back no matter what. And when you look at that and you put somebody else's interest ahead of yours, you tend to make the right decision. If you're going to do it where you only think about yourself, then everybody else goes to the wayside, and the decisions are never clear.
Yeah, you saw the emotion with his kids today, and obviously I feel for them. I do. I really do, Annie and Amy, because you think about 8 years without their dad. And he said at one point even Vegas was taking odds on whether or not he'd stay together with Patty, and she stood by his side. And he said that was something, that's the best decision he ever made, was marrying her, is what he said today.
Yeah, there's no question he was. I know with me, my wife would have been gone the day I was left for Colorado. That'd
See ya. Sayonara. She would not. I don't believe that, Sam. But I appreciate your time. And thank you for calling in to WGNS.
Always. I appreciate you asking.
Always good to talk with you. Sam Adam Jr., that is, famed attorney. And yes, he is. We've got more coming up here on WGN Radio, including at the top of the hour, the full news. And there's a lot of it from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Anna DeBlantis here on WGN. We're taking a break from Blago Talk, Blagojevich, although we will revisit that because we have someone who was by his side during that news conference today, who's been by his side for quite some time during the appellate process. Attorney Len Goodman will join us later. But right now, the doctor is in the house. And thank God you are here, Dr. Steve Salzman. Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
You're a trauma surgeon. You have opened your own group of clinics under the Green Care Medical banner. And Green Care Medical is where he treats people with chronic pain and chronic illness. You have this integrative cannabis medicine practice. And a lot of people come to you after other situations have failed for them. And they say, hey, can you help? And that's where you come in. But that's not why we're talking. It's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about the flu and the fact that it's prevalent and the fact that people come to work sick and they get everybody else sick. And you have ideas about how to protect ourselves. Should we be in that scenario, whether it's work or whatever you do in your life, where people around you are sick with the flu or sick with the cold?
Yeah, it's you talk about viruses, obviously, in the news, which is pretty big these time of year. But there are 19 million United States cases of the flu so far, 180,000 people.
19 million. In the United States.
Right, just the United States. And 180,000 hospitalized and 10,000 have died from the flu. These are just sort of CDC numbers that we recently discussed. As opposed to, by the way, the 12 confirmed coronavirus cases yeah. that are in the United States total. So you could see
that
you know, how flu, right, correct, how it is. But yeah, again, we talk about a lot of things about the flu and how contagious it is. But there's a lot of things that we can potentially do to protect ourselves from it. Simple things like washing hands for 15 to 20 seconds. That's singing the happy birthday song twice, by the way. Keeping your hands away.
You can sing it to yourself in your head, right?
Because yeah, no,
if you're in a public bathroom at work, you don't. Need, everyone doesn't need to hear that, right?
Hey, it's American Idol time, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Unless you got a good voice.
Gotta let it fly. Keeping your hands away from your eyes, your nose, your mouth, ports of entry where you can infect yourself. Want to avoid crowds, don't share things. And again, quarantining yourself. Stay home if you're sick, if that's possible. If it's not possible, you could sort of get clever. Find alternative workspaces. If you can't negotiate a home payday, maybe have a plan if something starts to sort of go awry. Have cold medicines available and tissues and fluid so that you can carry it with you, because most of what we're going to do is symptomatic treatment to make ourselves feel better.
I wonder if that would work. You call in some jobs that really don't do work from home, that can do work from home. You know, you do a lot of computer work or that kind of thing. Just say, hey, to the boss, I do have these symptoms. I can still work, but I want to work from home because I don't want to infect other people. That's the issue, right? If somebody comes to work, they're just like, oh, I got to go in. And you're like, no, you don't have to go in because then it spreads. That's the problem.
Right. You need an understanding CEO, I suppose, at some level, you know, because there's business and health, I suppose, at the intersection of all of it.
Now, I know Dr. Steve Salzman is here to talk about sleep issues, and there are a number of them. They always come up. They're already, people are already texting about them. In fact, 773, I have sleep apnea, and I do have a machine. The problem I'm having is I start work at 4:30, so when I get home, I'm exhausted. Usually sleep by 8, and they're talking about their schedule and everything. Should I take sleeping meds? Please help me. And this plea is something you hear from so many people who have sleeping problems, because if you don't get enough sleep, it is such an impact on your life.
It's devastating. It's the whole entire premise of how we treat patients starts with sleep and feeling better, because if those two things are not fixed, everything else you do is going to predictively fail. Any therapies, any other interventions. And so sleep is a huge, huge issue. And it's involved with so many aspects, almost probably every aspect of our body in one way or another. And that's why when you lose sleep, it impairs so many different things. all the higher levels of reasoning and problem solving and attention to detail is thrown off. Your mood, the growth and stress hormones are controlled by sleep, your immune and cardiovascular system controlled by it. So obviously you could see why all of these studies show this increased risk for obesity, for heart disease, for infections in patients who really get poor sleep. And it's a huge issue. 70 million Americans of all ages suffer from some kind of chronic sleep problems. Obviously, just like the person who just called in or wrote in, sleep apnea. The insomnia and sleep apnea are the two biggest. And in terms of sleep apnea, if we just want to sort of parse out these things, first of all, let's talk about what is sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is somebody who has a lack of oxygen and air exchange for greater than 10 seconds. Their pharynx closes off and they'll essentially, with the loud snoring and snort themselves awake to some degree because the body gets activated when you're hypoxic, when there's a lack of oxygen for a fight or flight response. And so there's this huge stress that happens and the body wakes up because it thinks it needs air. So the brain wakes up to take a breath. So that's what sleep apnea is. And there are people that who greater than 10 seconds, but there are people who have ridiculous amounts of apnea where they don't breathe for 20, 30 seconds, essentially sort of suffocating their sleep. And if we're being honest, you know, obviously the biggest risk factor is excessive weight. And they've linked it to 10% weight gain is increases your odds for sleep apnea of six times the amount of potential. So there's
a weight issue that you can get some of it under control.
Correct. A lot, like very many things, lifestyle changes are very big. But, you know, we're just talking a little bit about sleep apnea. The whole entire sort of subject of sleep is so important that I sort of wanted to talk about in depth because everyone's going to get mad at us if we blow right through sleep again.
We cannot blow through sleep because it is such an issue. And we've got to revisit probiotics and magnesium on another day because that opened up a whole thing there. But this is important because this affects a number of people. 630 says, a mouthpiece has done wonders for me, helping my sleep apnea. Do you hear about this? What kinds of things do you recommend, Dr.
Sure.
Steve?
That could help. Obviously, exercise and losing weight, lifestyle change things will pay the biggest dividends in the end. They have CPAP machines. These are machines that pump air into your throat to try to keep your airway open. And then they talk about that bite plate, which moves your lower jaw forward, trying to sort of open up the airway so it doesn't collapse down. Yes, that would help for some people. But many people don't get the relief with just that one intervention. And again, lifestyle change and weight loss is probably the single best thing they could do to help themselves.
So are you're a fan of the machine? You just don't think it's the answer is what you're saying?
Well, no, the machine is unfortunately the answer for a lot of people who don't do the work of losing weight or taking care of themselves. And it continues to deteriorate where if they don't have that machine, they'll never get a good night of sleep. And it becomes an unfortunate necessary evil.
Got a question for Dr. Steve Salzman? Call us or text us and let us know. We're talking about sleep today. And there was a story about caffeine, which I didn't really love seeing because I am a big coffee person. I got my three cups in the morning, sometimes two, but usually three. And, you know, a lot of us rely on our coffee to give us that kick start and get going with our day, Dr. Steve, and there's an issue there with sleep.
Right. But again, let's talk about caffeine. It's a drug, and that drug, when you take it in and break it down the half-life, caffeine could last upwards of 4 to 6 hours, which is why taking that late cup of coffee in the day is something you probably shouldn't do because it could have much longer-lasting effects than you might imagine. But caffeine, it makes your heart work harder. It increases your blood pressure. It's a diuretic, which can potentially cause patients to dehydrate further. Not to mention, it's also implicated in affecting calcium absorption. It increases your acidity and makes GERD worse and decreases iron absorption.
Oh, my gosh. There's
a lot of
terrible
things. Well, you know, but again, we talk about what's the safe amount. If you look at what the study showed, 200 milligrams is safe. About 2 5-ounce cups of coffee is what they'd consider a safe caffeine ingestion. But once you get up around 600 milligrams, that 4 to 7 cups, depending on patients' chronic health situations, cardiovascular status, it could be quite dangerous. So you got to keep that in moderation.
You're talking about afternoon caffeine fixes in particular in terms of affecting sleep. Or are you talking any time during the day? If you're drinking a lot of coffee, it can affect your sleep later.
Correct. Both of those things can potentially affect your sleep. But there's no question later on in the day, if you have a cup of coffee at 4 or 5 o'clock, it would not be out of the realm of possibility that that's still affecting you and causing, you know, the insomnia to be worsened by a drug effect.
Okay, we're going to be back with Dr. Steve Saltzman, trauma surgeon by day, but he also owns a string of clinics called Green Care Medical, where he treats people with chronic pain and chronic illness. And he's got more thoughts about sleep. He can answer your questions. We have a number of texts coming in. We can also open the phone lines for you, because we are going to really devote the next amount of time that we have about sleep with Dr. Steve Saltzman here on WGN. Anna DeVellante is here on WGN along with Dr. Steve Saltzman on this Wellness Wednesday. We're talking about sleep. We're taking your texts and your calls about sleep issues. He's going to address some of them in just a second. Wellness Wednesdays, by the way, sponsored by Grainberry Cereal. Pick up Grainberry today at your local Jewel Osco store. Art from Rockport won the giveaway there. So congratulations to you, Art. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening to WGN Radio. Be sure to check out the CB app. Hit up Facebook. Tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV. Your pick could be Chicago's Best. Dr. Steve Saltzman is here. He is a trauma surgeon. He has a group of clinics under Green Care Medical. That's where we know him from. And we're talking about sleep with the doctor this Wellness Wednesday. A lot of people know that people have all kinds of sleep issues, and it totally impacts your life. I know I sometimes have this issue where I get up at like 3 a.m. every single night. I have no idea what this is, but my coffee's in the morning, so I'm not connecting them yet because I can't give up my coffee. Well, we heard about coffee. Now we want to talk about cell phones, because you really have, there's an issue with cell phones and sleep, and I think a lot of us are big offenders in this area.
Everybody is in today's day and age to some degree, but it's a big problem. And we talk to patients about this too, about sleep hygiene. And one of the things you need to do is remove yourself from the cell phones and the tablets and the computers an hour or two before bed. The studies appear to show that melatonin, that's a hormone that controls sleep-wake cycles, or what I tell patients as circadian rhythms, it suppresses melatonin. And so you want to, if you decrease melatonin, it's harder to fall asleep and stay asleep. So, again, you want to try to avoid those. It keeps your brain alert. It potentially can wake you up if you are falling asleep with the dings and messages and texts. And so, and 72% of the children 6 to 17 sleep with at least one device in their bedroom. So all of these poor sleep hygiene habits that get set up contribute greatly to many of the insomnia and sleep problems that patients have.
This is a female, 60 plus. I get right to sleep, no problem, but wake up at 2:30 or 3 in the morning for 2 to 3 hours. I was saying I have that sometimes.
Okay, so
what's going on here?
I got a whole theory on this.
Too much caffeine,
answer.
Don't tell me
no,
that.
No, it's absolutely caffeine. No, it's not caffeine. I think what happens and what we find is when I go and see patients in the clinic, the very first thing we do is something called sleep training. And what I do is we slowly creep up to an effective dose where patients sleep 6 to 7 hours a night. And when they sleep 6 to 7 hours a night, how do you know they're starting to get into that good sleep? When they're having dreams. You want to get into that deep restorative stage 4 sleep. And so with patients, a lot of times what we find is that it's almost that they set themselves up to, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning seems to be the time that every single patient gives me. So Anna, you and the person who wrote it, very, very common. And they just pop right up. And the truth is that I think some of this is our brain working against us and conspiring against us. I tell many of the patients that I see in the clinic, if you want to know who hates you the most, look in the mirror. It's your brain. And our brain, you know, and most of the patients that come in with all of these chronic issues, their brain is controlling them. And in 6 to 8 months from after meeting, I want them to control their brain. And some of that stuff is manifested in almost a learned behavior where it's almost like toilet training the brain. Boom, at 3 o'clock, you're going to wake right out of sleep. It used to happen to me too. It's the same thing that patients go and set themselves up for this 3 o'clock wake up every night. It's the same thing I sort of put to use when it comes time to this whole theory of neuroplasticity, of toilet training the brain back into a pre-injury, pre-disease, pre-trauma state.
is an afternoon nap, 815, a good replacement for a shorter night's sleep? I suppose we all like to take an afternoon nap. I like a good afternoon nap. I hear that you got to really limit it, though. 20 minutes is the sweet spot. I go down for 3 hours.
I'm not a nap fan. No. I tell everybody, no naps, no bottles, no naps. We're not babies, right? If it's light out, stay up. And if patients need to take naps, the majority of the time, it's because their sleep is so crappy at night, you know, that they're falling on their face. Whether it be from obstructive sleep apnea, caffeine, or their brains just not letting them rest, any of those things.
So maybe you mess up the rhythm for later that night, then you're not going to sleep again? Is that an issue ever? If you nap during the day, then does that sort of later, you get into that cycle where you still don't sleep very well at night because you're well-rested from earlier?
Well, you probably know. Actually, yes, you don't sleep well at night, but it's not because you're probably well-rested from that. Nap is almost that catch-up sleep that you never really, there's no such thing. You never really catch up. So, you know, again, you want to, when it's day, it's day. When it's night. And, you know, the next night, when patients lie down, you know, to go to sleep, you set their brain with the intention of when it's night, we sleep. When it's day, we're awake.
All right. We love hearing from Dr. Steve Saltzman. He'll be back again in a couple weeks here with more medical thoughts. Thanks for the thoughts on sleep. And you can find him. Green Care Medical is where he is. Dr. Steve Saltzman. Thanks. Good seeing you, Dr. Steve. We've got more from the good doctor to the good lawyer. Attorney Len Goodman is on the line. He was part of the appellate team for Rob Blagojevich. And Len, were you out there for that news conference today to hear him speak?
I was, Anna.
Your thoughts? How did you take this in? You've been with him for a long time.
Yeah, for 8 years. It was heartwarming to walk in that house and see the family reunited and see Rod come down the stairs. He had cut himself shaving and, you know, yelling at Patty, "Where's my socks?" And the two girls, Annie and Amy, there. And just, you know, it's a very rare and resilient family that can stay together through all of this. And, you know, this is what it's all about. I mean, this is really why. You know, people like me do what we do and represent people, and just to see the happy reunions. So it was heartwarming.
Yeah. What did the family members say? The daughters, we didn't see them at the news conference. You probably saw them. Where they had to be overjoyed to see their dad.
Yeah. You know, they've been away for a long time. I mean, the Annie, she's 16 years old. She was a small child when Rod was taken away. And so it's going to take some time, but it's all going to, you know, they're such a strong family, and Patty is such an anchor that I really think they're going to do great.
You've been with them all this time, Len. Whenever I talked to you in the past over the years when things would come up with his appeals, and even that moment when it looked like they did toss out several of the charges related to selling the Senate seat, and everyone thought, well, maybe they'll reduce his sentence. Then they didn't. It remained at 14 years. You always were tenacious in going after this case, as a good lawyer does, but it seemed hard to look for hope that he would ever be released before 14 years, and you saw that. Today, was it a complete surprise to you?
I thought he was going to be released this summer. So when that didn't happen, you know, you start to get the feeling that nothing good is ever going to happen to this family, you know. But, you know, Rod has tremendous faith. And I was trying to think about how many briefs I've filed for, you know, Blagojevich over these years. And, you know, we had two appeals in the Seventh Circuit. We had a resentencing. You know, with 100 letters of support from fellow prisoners, we had two petitions in the U.S. Supreme Court. Now we're on our second commutation petition. So it's been a long road. And, you know, every time Rod has read one of these petitions that we filed, he's always said, you know, are we right on the law? Yeah, I'm like, yeah, Rod, we're pretty solid on the law. Well, then we're going to win. You know, I have faith in the justice system. And I don't always share that faith, but it was inspiring, you know, to have a client like that so much believes that in the end it's going to be all right.
We're running low on time here, Len, but I did want to ask you, because I think this is the question now, and we heard hints of this in his address today outside his house there in Ravenswood Manor. Rob Blagojevich talked about criminal justice reform may be his next, the next chapter of his life. That may be where he devotes his efforts. Do you get that feeling? What do you think is next for the former governor?
That was my feeling in talking to Rod. He seemed very passionate about that. And, you know, he's a talented guy. He's got a lot to offer. And if he directs his energies in that field, it would be very welcome. And he could do great things. And I wish him wish him the best.
All right. I hope that happens. Len Goodman, it's good to speak with you. Thank you for taking time out for us.
All right.
Day.
Good to talk to you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. More to come here on WGN Radio at the bottom of the hour. Of course, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And Andrea Darlis is going to join us as well. She covered Rogojevich, but she's got other thoughts, too. So more to come. Stay with us. 227 here on WGN. Here on WGN. Anna DeVlantis here. And what a day it has been in the state of Illinois. I have someone here who I just love seeing. She's a familiar voice, familiar face here on WGN. You remember, it's Andrea Darlis. Let's just not be around the bush. I have so much more I could say to heap praise all over you, but it's good to see you, Andrea.
It's always good to be here with you. I always enjoy our talks and our discussions and everything that is topical. And I know we usually talk education and education-related stories, but you and I were talking last night. Just couldn't help, you know, being glued to the television and to the radio watching Rod Blagojevich be released from prison. And props to Julie Unruh, by the way, who got that first interview. Yeah, who got that first interview at the Colorado airport with him.
Mm-hmm. I saw that. There was you saw her walking backwards. And you know what struck me about that, Andrea, and you know this because you, like I did, covered Rod Blagojevich for a long time. Mm-hmm. We covered the trials, but we also covered him as governor. You know, I just ran into him in different types of public events over the years. And the one thing that always strikes you about him is his political ability, his charisma. And he even had it there, fresh out of prison. He's talking to like the first people from Chicago, among the first that he's seen in a long time. And he remembers the cameraman's name. And he talks to him and he says, "How you doing, Ted?" And
how about that?
And Julie, too. But I know Julie's been in contact with him over the years. But still, that just shows that the political astuteness that he has that, and I hope he uses it for good. He says the next chapter is going to be about that, about not about him, but about criminal justice reform and helping other people. And I hope that's true.
I hope that's true too, Anna. And you know, you bring up a good point. He is extremely charismatic. There was a report that came from one of our sister stations in Colorado. They were covering it for Channel 9, and she said that at one point that he came out, stopped by, and people were actually coming up to the reporters. You know, the plethora of reporters standing outside the prison in Colorado saying, "Oh, Governor Blagojevich? Oh, yeah, the Illinois governor." And she said they were a group of younger people, so they were obviously familiar with him, you know, someone who hadn't covered him.
Did you see him meet and greeting the people at the airport? He was just back in that political mode where he's like, "Hey, how you doing?
Right.
Meeting everybody. How are you?" And they're like, some of them are looking up. They didn't even notice he was there. Maybe didn't know who he was.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. But he's showing up there, and he's you know, he's doing that thing. He's working the room.
Right.
Can be used for good. If his powerful voice, he wants to put it in that direction. You were saying also before that he's a convicted felon now. The crimes are not erased when you commute a sentence.
Right.
He has not been pardoned.
Yeah, and I see all over. And again, you know, you have to watch the comments on social media. But that's what's really struck me, even from yesterday when we first reported that here. People were trolling, of course, online saying, "I can't believe he's being pardoned." Okay.
He's not.
You know, he's not. He's still a convicted felon. It's on his record. He was convicted. The sentence was commuted. And I still am even hearing that this morning and then into this afternoon, having it be re-explained that the conviction isn't wiped away, just the sentence was shortened.
So it's an important reminder because he still is a felon. He still has that felony conviction. He still was impeached.
Yes.
And they also put in the language when they impeached him that it bars him from holding public office in the state of Illinois ever again.
Right.
That's not a possibility for him. I suppose technically he could still run for Congress. I guess he could run for president and you could laugh at that, but then you could say, wait a minute, that's possible.
I know.
And that is possible.
Prior to 3 years ago, Anna, I would have said, you know, oh, that couldn't happen. But now I really think anything can happen. He is, you brought up a great word, though. He is charismatic. He is that people person. You know, he always has been, even from his days, you know, before he was governor in Chicago. He's on the plane taking selfies with Chuck Gowdy,
yeah,
you know, and then tweeting that out. So I really do hope he does use this commutation, this early release, this new freedom that he has to do some of the things that he said this morning that he was going to do in between quoting the scriptures and talking about
he was political. He was personally talked about him being a political prisoner. Even I think some people were disappointed, and we've been hearing from our listeners throughout the day today here that they did not hear any sort of remorse. They didn't hear any kind of apology, and that's because Rod Blagojevich truly believes he was a victim of the system and he was lashing out at prosecutors. We've heard this for, you know, years. We know this is his story. We know this is his belief. And that's his story. Again, if he chooses to use what happened to him in a positive way to help others, I think that'd be a great step forward. When we talk about the next chapter, though, if it's not running for political office, it's still possible he could play a role in politics. He could still work with maybe President Trump. I don't know what his plan is, but there are certainly opportunities for him to be out there again, full ego, everything. Or he could take a different path. And I think this is really going to define who he is.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I am curious. Kind of in my head, I thought, all right, what's he going to do? Absolutely something he's, you know, still an attorney at, although I don't know if he has.
I think there's an ARDC meeting about his license, if it can be reinstated. I believe Sam Adam told me on the phone earlier that might be this week coming up. Next week, maybe, that he gets a look at his license about whether he can practice law.
That would make sense, too. And I could see him doing something maybe, you know, just in his mind, perhaps with the Innocence Project or something, you know, of that sort in helping to reform the criminal justice system. He referenced, I found it interesting that, you know, he was on those tapes years ago kind of dissing Jesse Jackson Jr., but then he was one of the people in his speech this morning that he thanked, Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr. So perhaps he could do something with the black community or something in Reverend Jackson's realm.
Yeah, Reverend Jackson's been a huge supporter, the whole Jackson family of him, spoken out publicly for all along that he needs to get out and something needs to happen there. And he referenced him during his speech today, thanking him for his support. And you saw a number of black ministers behind him as he addressed racism in the justice system. And again, indicated that was a piece of what he wants to confront moving forward. 847, this is your point, Andrea. The confusing point, part of it all, is caused by media crawls on television headlining pardon instead of commutation.
Right.
It happened on multiple networks, both on screen and heading into commercial prior to telling the story. So people see that headline and they think it is a pardon, but it's not.
No, he hasn't been exonerated. He's still a convicted felon. He's not spending as much time in prison as he was supposed to. And that was an interesting point too, because I saw Patrick Fitzgerald and Patrick Collins and former Special Agent Robert Grant on all the various stations and on our ear here too, just expressing concern for what they say was President Trump kind of undermining the whole proceedings, you know, as far as the prosecutors and all the work that they had to go through, and the judges and the judge in sentencing this, you know, that kind of being tossed by the wayside. But I mean, I guess you could argue that 8 years for this crime was probably sufficient.
Oh, I've heard the feds talk about it today, and the point they're making and have made all along is this was a stiffer sentence, a very stiff sentence. That nobody's denying that. Twice as much as former Governor Ryan got for his crimes, and so they wanted to send a message. The judge agreed and wanted to send this message of 14 years to try to tell the politicians across the state of Illinois that corruption will not be tolerated. I would just say, I'm not sure that message was heard. And if you look at this federal investigation that's underway right now, which by all accounts is going to ensnare a number of people, it doesn't seem like anybody's listening.
No, and it is interesting. Isn't it just, it's crazy. You know, 8 years have passed. You covered the trial. I covered the trial. In fact, we were talking yesterday, too, about just, I remember being at that trial. You were there. I think Susan Carlson was there, too. And we were all sitting with each other at one point. And I think Judy Pilak was there at one point, too. And the governor had turned around and just kind of started talking with everybody as though
he was the best at that.
As
always.
Though he was just, you know.
I remember I was introduced him on stage at the Women's Business Development Center. There was a big gala to recognize outstanding women business owners at Navy Pier. And he worked that entire room, went person to person, knew their name, knew something about their business. I'm sure he worked that at home in front of the mirror beforehand. I don't know how he did it, but that was his gift.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of figuring out how he uses that gift, because he clearly still has it. And you saw that on full display today outside his house, even 8 years later, spending all that rough time in prison.
It was almost as though nothing had changed, you know, kind of to your earlier point before I was reminiscing about us covering the trials, I should say. But it was though as nothing has changed, right, Anna? Because I remember
I felt that way,
both
too.
Both being outside of that house, you know, so many years ago
I chased him down the alley one time trying to get comment for something.
With the indictment and with the arrest and, you know, just the days that we spent there. And then, boom, there he is again, holding court over that same balcony with the media gaggle in front of his house. It was really as though you blinked and time just went like that.
Yeah. It felt a little bit that way, except for his hair's white.
And then, exactly.
Very quickly here, Andre, and this is Andre Dallas, but you can stick around maybe for the next segment.
Yeah,
I just want to get in very quickly your comedy for cancer. You have a great benefit that you are part of, and a number of WGN favorites are also part of it.
Yeah, we definitely want to have everybody out there. It's next weekend, and I'm sorry, next Thursday at the Tivoli Theater. It's myself, Pat Tomasulo, and Mike Toomey, and a young comedian named Jeannie Dugan, Southside girl, from my neck of the woods. But it's at the Tivoli Theater. February 27th. It's called Comedy for Cancer, and all the proceeds benefit the H Foundation. They're the ones who put on the Goombe Bash in the summertime. It is one of the most remarkable organizations. They are just, every dollar goes toward helping families who have dealt with the loss and cancer has afflicted or affected in some way, shape, or form. And truly, at one point, cancer has affected everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody
true.
Either has experienced it or knows somebody who has.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
in varying degrees of challenges.
Absolutely.
Kind of
so it's a wonderful organization. So come on out. Tickets are $65 in advance, $75 at the door. And hey, to see Pat Tomasulo and Mike Toomey on stage together.
Oh, they're great.
That's a gift.
They're great. Stick around, will you?
Okay. Yes.
And we'll be back with more here on WGN Radio. 2:43 is the time. 2:45, Andre Dallas still here with us. We've got Steve Bertrand and Lauren Lapka in studio. We have an amended version or abbreviated version of Trending Topics today because we're going to get over to Ro Khan and his thoughts on Rod Blagojevich in just a minute. Okay, guys, you ready for this? You follow the Justin Bieber? Anybody a Justin Biebs fan?
I'm a fan.
Oh,
not
huge.
Necessarily of him, but
I thought
of his music.
Wait, Steve, I thought you went to his concert.
No, I saw the Jonas Brothers.
Oh, God. I get them confused. Shows you what a fan I am. I can't even tell the difference.
Yeah, with Hannah Montana, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a picture of me with three 12-year-old girls, and I had a Hannah Montana wig on at the concert.
Oh, no way.
Can I be incendiary just for a second here?
Sure.
I'm not a fan of Justin Bieber.
No, I don't.
I'm not. 13.
Well, maybe you're a fan of this. We've got some audio here. Something that he was involved with. He was, you know, on that carpool karaoke thing. He's talking about that. And here he is with some audio of him moving on up, I guess, is what he did.
No, that's
different one. We have him with James Corden. That's the guy we're looking for. Thanks, Jasmine.
Smelly cat, smelly cat, what are they feeding you? Smelly cat, smelly cat, what a jumpball.
So he says that he and his wife Haley, you like him? Do you like the smelly cat? He's a big fan of the smelly cat. And so there he is.
He was doing all the Friends impersonations, I think.
Yes.
Joey. And...
All right, good. Now I like him again.
Yes. He says he's a big fan of sitcom Friends and the feline theme song. And that was performed originally by Lisa Kudrow, of course. And there he is doing that. That's pretty cool. I didn't think he sounded that great doing it, though.
No. Not so much.
See, no, but he looked great doing it.
No, he's got great hair.
He's got a really weird look going on right now.
He's got a weird mustache.
He looks like a kid living at home that's 22, but almost pedophilia looking.
Oh,
it's really weird.
That's a pretty specific look.
Lauren Lapka.
He's all grown up now, though. He's married, and you know he's talking about how he's all settled down, and life is different for him.
Is there an emoji for that?
So he went pure sloppy once he got married. That's really what it looks like.
I just don't see the, again.
You don't see the appeal.
I'm not his target, but.
Maybe Steve Bertrand will take us to his concert when he's in town. That would be fun.
Only if he opens for Hannah Montana.
Oh. Okay, we've got another thing to talk about here. We've got the Shamrock Shake is back. I know we spent this yesterday, but apparently there's some places where they're going to start offering it year-round. McDonald's says, yeah, it's popular. Yeah, it started today, and they're offering the Shamrock Shake at the restaurants. So now they said, we're thinking about putting it nationwide and all year-round.
No.
Places in different cities where you can get it.
No, it's like having Christmas all year-round. You can't.
It's like
special. It's like the McRib, really, right? They only offer that at a specific time.
Kind of drives the demand by it being limited availability, because otherwise, why would you eat it?
Right.
It's like mint chocolate chip. You can get that anytime, too.
I know. That's
but the
true.
Shamrock Shake, I think, is special. Can we get a Shamrock Shake anywhere? I don't really know where else they have a minty flavored thing.
I don't think so.
My dad's basement. He'd make the cream de menthe.
The grasshoppers.
I used to love going to basement parties where they would make those things. It's always in the basement.
Us too, right?
It was.
Holiday parties, yep. Cream
that
de
way you couldn't fall down the stairs.
Oh, God. Finally here, Groupon, I guess, is in trouble. They've lost $22 million this quarter. And remember when they were like the biggest thing and they were offered like billions and billions to sell that company?
Right.
It was the Chicago darling and that kind of thing. So now times are turning. I mean, they just times are changing. I guess people aren't using the Groupon as much. I don't know.
I haven't used it in ages. But when they first had the Groupon,
mm-hmm.
the Groupon were all over
it. You guys are talking about it like it's the Jewel.
The Jewel.
The Jewel. The Groupons. There's an S on there because it's in Chicago.
They got a Groupon over there.
That's right.
And finally, we're just very proud of the fact that $500 million was spent by film and TV crews in Illinois last year. It's a story that we continue to talk about because it's pretty cool how many different films and movies are shot right here in this great city.
You know what else is really cool? That they still film even when it's this cold. They were filming by Union
souls.
Station yesterday.
So true.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Andrea Darlis. It's
so
good
much,
to see
Anna.
You.
Good to see you, and we'll see you soon.
Yep. See you soon. Steve Bertrand and Lauren Lapka, because Ro Khan has stepped into the studio here, and boy, this Rod Blagojevich story has some legs. We were talking about Rod Blagojevich 2.0 and what will he do now. I think that's the defining thing here. You think he's going to be in the political world, Ro?
Sure. Well, he's going to be in the media world in some way, shape, or form. He's going to be a presence. And you could see he's we talked to his brother yesterday, Robert. And
great show yesterday. I heard that. And I just, it, fascinating stuff, because they're not exactly tight.
No. And that's the interesting piece. And I think that what Robert wants to do is, well, let's go back and explain why. Mm-hmm. Because they were co-defendants in the first trial. And they were trying to work them against each other, at least work Robert against Rod.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that Rod felt as though that was, you know, not good, and that wasn't loyal, and that if they were riding together, they were dying together. Because Robert was his fundraiser. Right. And knew a lot about what had happened in the fundraising efforts, including, but most importantly, the children's hospital issue.
Right. Right.
So when you get through all of that, Robert yesterday was saying, hey, you know, this is good. Thank God for Donald Trump. And, you know, he called back our producers afterwards, and he wanted to know if he'd said something to offend, because we were moving off onto a break, and we explained that the commercial was coming up. We had to do it. That's the way it goes around here. So he was like, oh, you just want to make sure everything is okay. And just remember this, MAGA. Right. And so I think that the family is going to go, and you saw Rod today be very, very, very complimentary of the president, and, you know, call him a strong leader, and that he's the only guy getting anything done. And when it comes to justice reform, he's the only guy ever getting anything done. And he's trying to wrap himself in that. Now, I'm personally...
The brother is.
No, or have you, this is Rod today.
That's Rod today.
At the press conference.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he calls himself a Trumpocrat.
Right.
I had not heard that term before.
And it was a bit of a, you know, circusy kind of a thing today, mm-hmm. right? You had all kinds of different people. You had people from the neighborhood. You had Ronnie Woo Woo was there in his Cubs uniform.
Ronnie shows up at the most bizarre times, I think. You know, I understand all Cubs related events. That's he's there.
Yeah. I think
non-Cubs?
If there's a camera, I think he's there. He might live in the neighborhood. I'm just going to kind of guess it was down the block. But anyway, the point is that's where it's heading. It's heading toward, he's going to be on Fox News tonight. He's going to be on the Martha McCallum show. Rod is. And so we'll see. I think he's going
There's a political future there. You're sensing that.
Well, I don't know if he's going to get elected.
No, but I mean being involved with campaigns or actively campaigning.
He'll be out on the trail
with the president.
Yes. Although the president, you know, the president from time to time says things that strain credulity. But yesterday when he goes, I didn't really know him that well. I believed him. You know, when he goes, first of all, I call him Blagojevich, right? And then, and I just, you know, when he was on The Apprentice, it wasn't like he was getting to know those people. He was coming in, shooting a scene, and getting out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing was written for him.
I don't think he was out dining with them at the Trump Hotel afterwards. There were so many of them, and he just sort of walked in as the big man and walked out.
Right. Roger fired. I mean, the most amount of time he spent with him was in the boardroom scene.
The president did tweet about him three hours ago. Rod Blagojevich did not sell the Senate seat. He served 8 years in prison while with many remaining. He paid a big price. So he's just kind of talking.
Yeah, he wasn't able to actually sell the Senate seat because the FBI went in because they didn't want a constitutional crisis, because there was an important vote coming up and they didn't want it to be seen that it would have been down. The split between Republicans and Democrats in the Senate at that point was razor thin, as it is, you know, sort of now. And if you had not duly placed senator in that seat, then there would be questions about anything that happened legally thereafter.
They did toss out most of the charges related to selling the Senate seat, based on a technicality, I think, and it was eventually called log rolling, that he was trying to do
That's
political gamesmanship
said, yes.
kind of thing, or which happens all the time, and so those were tossed out. There still was enough there that the judge thought not to change his sentence
right.
after that, that there was still that message sending 14 years.
So earlier today on Windy City Live, we were talking about this, and the crowd, when we were, there's a live audience in there, and the live audience applauded when, we were talking about Rob Blagojevich. And apparently in the African-American community, according to Val Warner, he's a very, very popular political figure. And he's a guy that is beloved and would probably, if he wanted to run for something, would be able to get elected. And there would be people who would work for him. And there was a number of African-American
yep.
supporters around him.
You saw that.
I ask this question respectfully.
Okay.
Were there African-American kids at Children's Memorial Hospital whose Medicaid payments, because that's what the state payment he was holding up, was Medicaid, that were potentially impacted by the lack of Medicaid payments? Because the kids who have insurance through their parents, they're not being affected by what Rod was holding up. That was the poorest among us who were being held up mm-hmm. by what Rod was doing, because he wanted a $50,000 fundraiser.
It's an important reminder, but you do see strong black support for him. And he talked about the part of the system that needs to be reformed has to do partially with the way it treats black and brown people.
We
and
all
I
agree
think,
with that.
But I think you can see him sort of creating this group of supporters around
right.
him for whatever that next chapter is.
One of the interesting things about the president and Rod Blagojevich together, I think it was interesting to me, is that they are sending a message to people who have done the wrong thing, that we got your back.
Mm-hmm.
We understand you. You can get away with this. Because this, I think, is really a predicate for the president for a raft of other dismissals of cases. He's the chief law enforcement officer, right? That's what he said yesterday. I think
yeah.
he's going to use that next week.
We'll see. I mean, we got a break, because then we got to come back and find out what's coming up on the Rokan show with Rokan, who's right here.
Right there. Well, I just did the whole show.
Well, we got more. But just hang on, because we got more to talk about. And then the news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.